Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. All right, welcome to 2016. This is the first Roguecast of 2016.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it.
Yeah. That's it. Shut it down.
we had a good run.
Like 2015.
Well, we'll give it a few more minutes, see how it goes.
All right. Dave's not feeling it. Anyway, we have all our events starting back up. Reading with Rogues is next week, next Tuesday.
Now I'm feeling it.
That's going to be January 12th over at Sushinini. We are doing Star Wars Volume 1, which we're all looking forward to discussing and eating delicious sushi.
Was the Red Devil roll. That's what we got to get.
That's our recommendation.
So delicious.
I think we can only order sushi that is Star Wars themed.
It might be kind of hard.
I'm just saying.
The Admiral Snack Bar.
Then on Wednesday, January 13th, that's going to be Ladies' Night over at Palermo's Italian. The next Sunday is going to be the Magic the Gathering Oath of the Gatewatch pre-release. That's on January 17th at noon and 4 p.m. We still have plenty of signups available on that. And you can always walk in. Unless we get crazy busy, we usually have some walk-in slots.
Yep.
Then on Monday, January 18th, over at Lamppost Coffee, we're doing our Gaming with Rogues and we're doing Machikoro. As always, if you have a Rogue card, you get bonus discounts on Star Wars and Machikoro this month.
Indeed, indeed.
And if you have a Rogue card, make sure and check your email, because we sent out a pretty notable member newsletter that you'll want to get in on before next week.
Yes, you will.
And in terms of actual news, it's kind of a quiet time right now.
Yeah, like there's not a ton of big movie announcements happening. I feel like we're right on the cusp of probably some announcements from Marvel and DC. But there's not a ton of big stuff.
Well, we got a ton of stuff at Christmas time for all the summer releases and all that. We talked about all those trailers that week.
People should just be happy with that.
There was one teaser that went up, and that is the Daredevil Season 2 teaser.
Yep.
Which was mostly just kind of a few images, a few images in motion, a little bit of dialogue.
Yep. I saw what's her name in there?
Elodie Young is Elektra.
Yes, but also, returning from Season 1. I can't say the actress's name.
Claire Temple? Rosario Dawson?
Yep. So her and you do glimpse...
The Punisher,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's very clear this is going to be Punisher, Elektra. Should be some fun stuff in that season, too. I don't know if D'Onofrio's in season two.
He'll probably make an appearance.
Yeah.
But he's in prison.
Yeah, but that never stopped the Kingpin.
Was he actually in prison?
Yeah, he got caught,
I couldn't quite remember where it ended up.
I think we're going to see more of the Hand, I would imagine.
Probably so.
If you incorporate Elektra into it, you kind of have
to... You probably do more hand. Yep.
Well, you know, if Fisk got taken down, I assume that there could be a chaotic power vacuum.
Yeah.
That could be the very thing, of course, that brings out the Punisher.
Yep, could be.
He's like, I'm going to have to start shooting these people.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder what they're... I mean, I assume they're going to do an origin for Punisher.
Yeah.
In this season.
Well, if there's a power vacuum, that means gang wars, which means crossfire, which means family's killed.
Yeah, it's true.
So I think that's probably what they're going
to
do.
I'm very excited to see this actor's take on the Punisher, because in everything he's in, he's really good.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Even though the intense thing pretty well.
I didn't like him as Shane, but that's just...
But that's not... Yeah, that's not his fault. He was perfect cast as Shane, but they just didn't know what to do with him writing-wise.
So I'm excited to see his version of Punisher.
So, and we have a date. This is due in March.
Yes, which is not long.
Not super far away.
Yeah.
March is also, of course, the month with Staple.
That's right.
Which the event for that is floating around.
I'm sure we can find time to do an all-day marathon watch of Daredevil.
During Staple?
Sure.
Also, that's when we do our inventory, so...
Is it literally the same weekend?
No, usually right within each other, though.
Yeah, it's like the weekend after or so.
So, yeah, that'll be fun. March is going to be busy. All right, that is all the news we have this time. So just a quick intro, and we'll be right back with our comics talk for the week. We were talking comics for the week of Wednesday, January 6th, and Nick, go ahead and...
You should start us off.
No, Nick needs to start us off this week. It's like ripping the Band-Aid off. Nick, give me your recommendation.
Okay, do it. Do it.
All right. There seems to be a Deadpool movie coming out. So, because of this, Marvel is inundating us with all things Deadpool.
I thought you were going to say, because of this, I've chosen to pick a Deadpool, like it took the movie to...
The movie's made Nick a fan.
See, I went a different way. No, but lots of new number ones heading your way. This week is Spider-Man Deadpool number one, his new team-up book. Big thing about this is, which I'm sure we've mentioned, is that writer Joe Kelly and artist Ed McGuinness are back.
They had a
long run. It was about, what, 50 issues?
They sort of brought the character to prominence, because he was not as big a character now as he is now for a while.
No, definitely not.
They kind of brought the character to prominence in the 90s with their run.
Yeah, and
I even read that run.
I owned that run.
I don't know if I still do.
I think you probably sold it. but that said, this is the bromance you never thought you wanted, and some people sitting at this table don't want.
Nope.
Which people, Nick?
I'm not going to point. It's mean.
Is it your own self-loathing?
But it's everyone but Nick.
Is this an ongoing or a miniseries?
It's an ongoing.
Okay.
Yay. For real?
Yeah.
Really?
It's an ongoing.
Okay.
Another two Jabberjaw characters, put them in a room and let the fun fly.
Or how about you put them in hell?
Okay, is that what happens?
Yes. It starts out with them in the hell dimension with Mindless Ones and the Dread Dormammu rising to ultimate power.
For those not familiar with the Mindless Ones, they're the servants of Doctor Strange's big bad guy, Dormammu.
Yep.
And Ed McGuinness draws the hell out of Dormammu in a new version that I have not seen, but it's kind of monstery and cool. And, yeah, a lot of joking ensues.
Ed McGuinness, is he the only artist on that?
Yeah. Yep, he draws the whole issue.
Don't Deadpool and Spidey hate each other? Or Spidey hates Deadpool?
Spider-Man does not like Deadpool. He, in fact, quit the Avengers because Deadpool was involved in the Avengers.
Spider-Man and I have a lot in common.
However, Deadpool loves Spider-Man. He's a big fan of him. And he wants to be buddy-buddies with him.
So now poor Spider-Man, who's always been the comedic guy, is going to be forced to play the straight man to even more wacky guy.
Yep.
That's pretty much exactly what this is. Yep. And
I got your number, Spider-Man Deadpool.
It's a number one.
That's nice. Bringing it home.
Still, lots of great jokes involved in here. Great one-liners that you would expect, both from Spider-Man and Deadpool.
Kelly seemed like he's having fun with his return to the character.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I think, has one of the best handles on what Deadpool's character is and sort of the zaniness that it can happen.
So then my question is, sometimes Deadpool has the somewhat more serious or angsty side percolating below the surface. Any of that?
There's mostly light? A little bit of it, but there's mostly jokes involved. There is sort of an end capper of why he actually was palling around with Spider-Man, whereas he has an ulterior motive, so there is that.
What is it?
Hey, that would be mean to
you. Oh, right, okay.
But
I was just being like Deadpool would be.
No, you were said Chimichanga.
Boring.
I stop picking Deadpool because you guys just make fun of
that's
him.
That's true. Now this sounds like so Nick, I'm guessing this delivers probably what fans are going to want, aside from the fact that it has also been McGuinness artwork.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what people want. So
I read a few pages, and if you don't hate Deadpool, you'll probably like this book.
This also has a very weird version of Hydro Man, which I think Dave and I were just discussing a little bit today, because he was like, oh, I love Sandman. And I said, I kind of liked Hydro Man a little bit more.
That's crazy talk.
That's the 90s kid, though. Nick is a 90s guy.
Hydro Man is the poor man's Sandman.
That's what I said.
You can still do cool things with Hydro Man. He's sure. Water.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just saying. Sandman's the original villain. Hydro Man is the poor man's Hydro Man.
You know what I was thinking? In the 90s, though, I have some fond memories of some, I think, early to mid-90s stories when they were part of that, Sinister Syndicate?
Yeah.
Or Sinister Six.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was Sinister Syndicate at the time.
Yeah, in the 80s?
Yeah. Or it was late 80s. Yeah, that's right, I guess.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that they did work together. I don't remember if they hated each other or if it was more like Captain Cold and
Heatwave. They did not like each other, and there was a point where they actually merged together and became the Mudman.
That's gross.
Yeah, it was kind of gross.
There's some gross,
but in its way,
transgressive.
But in its way, beautiful.
Yeah, sure.
But there's some grossness with this Hydro Man as well. So. Anyways, it does deliver exactly what Deadpool fans want.
Yep.
And Spider-Man fans, because it doesn't. It feels very Spider-Man.
Oh, and I was going to ask, the other Deadpool thing I have to ask is, how is it on the action side of things?
Lots of action.
Okay, cool.
But also, you get a free bonus book.
You do get the free issue of Vision number one. I don't know why, but
you know what's funny? So I don't know that any of us have really probed into that, but it's kind of hitting like sort of buzz cult kind of recognition.
Some people really like that.
So I don't know. I can't say anything for or against it. But it's in there, and people should check it out and let me know what they think of it.
Yeah. So if you, I've heard that if you read it as a horror book, it is immensely better. I don't know why. Hmm. A horror book.
Interesting. Okay.
Dave, what's your pick?
Right. So my pick is a recurring one, and it was the very book that I picked, I think, is one of my books of the year, which is Archie. This is the fifth issue of Archie. It is continuing the ongoing story. There's a different artist on this one, but... it's still, I believe they're all sort of, I would say, following in, I won't quite call it a house style, because it's not like house style like Archie used to be, but the house style of Fiona...
Staples.
And let me see, what's the name of that artist?
Veronica Fish.
Veronica Fish. What an unusual name. what's been going on in this, for those who've been reading it, is that, in the first issue, Archie and Betty had broken up. Veronica moves to town in like the second issue, I think.
Second or third.
And Archie is immediately kind of head over heels for the beautiful rich girl, and Jughead has been trying to liberate his friend from her clutches. So this is all about the delivery more than the concept, but there is a fun concept in this. One of the characters who I know least about, Reggie, historically I guess like the bully sort of Riverdale.
Yeah.
They reluctantly bring him in to help hatch a plan. They're like, nobody is more of a jerk and destroyer of good times than you. Help us do it. and they concoct a deal. Of course, things go crazy. There's a kind of funny framing story where Archie is telling you, the reader, a joke. But in that Ferris Bueller style, he's addressing the viewer, but people keep interrupting him.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's not able to deliver the punchline until the end. It's a pretty good joke, I gotta say. I enjoyed the issue. Randy, is this character new or not?
I don't know.
Or is she a re-envisionment of,
I believe she's a new character.
Okay. She's the one who's kind of got the fashion thing going on.
Yeah, I believe that's a new character.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, I'm liking her. There's some interesting new twists and turns with her in this issue. You know, the Archie books are all about that kind of, like, all about the dialogue and the character interplay. It's that same mixture of kind of slightly over-the-top goofy humor. It's that John Hughes stuff. We've talked about it, so I don't have a lot to say other than this is a fun new spin on Reggie, who is kind of... likably jerky. How do you write a bully that's kind of somewhat appealing?
Right.
Mark Waid found a way. And he's not like a full-on bully, like he's picking on the fat kid or whatever. He's just more of a jerk to everybody.
Yeah.
Just completely self-centered.
Yeah.
Anyway, Archie number 5.
All right.
Mambo number 5. Little callback to the 90s.
My pick is an unexpected one. It is Interceptor number 1. This is a new book from Heavy Metal. Heavy Metal, I don't know if people know this. I think we talked about this, that Grant Morris is going to be taking over editing Heavy Metal.
Yes, he is.
And this is a book...
Do you know what Heavy Metal is anymore?
Heavy Metal was is a sci-fi heavy comics magazine.
Yep. It was European and had nudity and violence.
It's British, I believe. Isn't that British?
It's like French, actually. Mobius and those
you're
guys.
Right. Well, Grant Morrison is going to be editor-in-chief, and they have started out putting some single issues out that he is basically having an editorial hand in, which at least... May just mean look to the script, but...
Right, but it's kind of maybe starting to have his stamp, or his...
Well, this is written by Donny Cates, who is an Austin local guy, who has written a few things. He wrote Buzzkill, which was about the superhero who was fueled by alcohol, but who was getting clean and sort of like lost his powers.
Yep.
And then Ghost Fleet, which was a sort of a trucker book, kind of sci-fi horror trucker. This one is... it's set on an alien planet that is the new home of the human race... And they fled Earth, supposedly because of ecological disasters. You find out in the first few pages that no, it was not ecological disasters. In fact, it was vampires. They fled Earth and they nuked it on the way out to get rid of the vampires. Turns out that didn't work, and now the vampires have advanced in technology and are maybe coming after this new human. So they
are they on another planet, or are they in like a space?
They're on another planet. They're on another planet, and so their president, who is 60 years old but looks like a kid, is consulting with his advisors, and they tell him about this contingency plan they have, which is a cybernetic soldier who is trained to fight in the dark. and they send her back down to the planet where she finds some surprises.
Interesting.
This is crazy. It's a little over the top. It's fun. It's also got some great action, some beautiful artwork.
Two words, space vampire.
By Dylan Burnett.
New,
I guess.
New to us, I'm
yeah.
guessing.
I have not seen his stuff before, but really, really nice stuff.
It reminds me of, Trad Moore, the guy who's doing Luther's
You know, actually, I was... This whole book gives me a vibe like Umbrella Academy. It reminds me of Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba's stuff, and... And it has that vibe of sort of Umbrella Academy, of the slightly weird but still very straightforward kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
This was really fun, and I like this first issue quite a bit.
You know, that's good to hear, because... for people who haven't, like, sort of followed the trajectory of the magazine Heavy Metal, like, for, like, 15 or 20 years now, it's kind of, I think, been considered to be in sort of a fallen state. Sadly, for better or worse, when one of the Ninja Turtle guys got rich, he bought the rights,
yeah.
and kind of ran with the, I think.
Yeah. He kind of ran with the nudity.
The TNA side of it, which is, you know, it's always been part of it, but they've also had kind of bolder, more experimental stories that, like, the Mobius stuff that everybody remembers from the 70s and 80s. And but it had kind of fallen into disrepair. Morrison's reign is, you know, definitely hoped that it will invigorate it. And this is a good kind of first indication that maybe that will be the case.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good first issue.
It was
on the Cheater Pick side of things. I have Amazing Spider-Man number 6, which was supposed to come out last week. Right. Marvel released them late. We got them on Saturday, but they're all on the new wall this week because most people probably didn't see them.
Yeah,
but this is the start of a new story. And it introduces, or it is involving one of Slott's original villains, Mr. Negative, who I've never thought was a great villain, but who has a sort of interesting power where he can, I guess he sort of creates the negative version of someone. So if he touches a great hero, they'll become like the worst villain.
Right.
So he has Cloak and Dagger in his thrall.
It was a pretty neat idea as far as just, even if only visually, what occurs.
Yeah. So they, with some of their goons, they spring him, and then they're going to have to go up against Spider-Man. And that's all, of course, ongoing with the stuff, the subplots about Scorpio and his group, which name I always forget.
Zodiac.
The Zodiac, thank you. And Spider-Man and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Mockingbird and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is just a great continuation of what's been going on in this book. They've got a different artist on this run. It's Matteo Baffini.
Sure.
And it's a little more realistic than Umberto Ramos's kind of stuff, and I'm digging it. And it's another good issue of Spider-Man. I'm liking this book a lot.
You know, I was slightly sad to see that they were, when I read the issue, that they were under his thrall, because I love Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah.
They're one of those favorite cult characters.
Yep.
I have a feeling they won't be under his thrall forever, so I'm not too worried about it.
Yep.
But even if just for seeing them visually, they just have some of the coolest visuals in comics.
Yes, they're...
And as tweaked by, you know, his powers and stuff like that, they get to try on some new stuff, too.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I always like seeing them visually, if nothing else.
Nick, what is your other pick this week?
My other pick is Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm wrong. Uncanny X-Men number 1.
Ballpark. No, you're not wrong.
I'm really not wrong. But because this is an X-Men team run by Magneto, has Sabretooth, will eventually have Mystique.
Yeah. Isn't there another villain on there, or is it just Sabretooth I'm thinking of?
Sabretooth and Magneto. You throw Monet St. Croix and
Psylocke. She's just stuck up.
She's
but
just a jerk.
Archangel's in it, too, right? And he's been a bad cat.
He's been a very bad guy. Now he's just sort of a lobotomized version of himself.
they're using him like a drone.
Use him as a drone, essentially, which is weird and
that's
dark.
That's messed up. I kind of liked it.
Yeah. I do, too. I actually really like Monet St. Croix. She has always been one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Peter David
she
used
came out
her
of Generation
well.
X, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And David used her heavily in his X-Factor run.
Right, right.
But seeing her in sort of her egotistical self is always fun.
I think it has to be fun to write characters like that.
I think so, too. But this is basically... The original X-Men has sort of abandoned the Earth... not really to save themselves, but because...
This is the Inhumans thing,
because
right?
mutants are dwindling,
The Terrigen Mist
Terrigen
is poisoning
Mist is
people.
So killing them off.
The Terrigen Mist thing.
Yeah.
I know about this, but where did it come from? Where did they first introduce this?
It was during... at the trail end of the Jonathan Hickman big... I think Infinity.
What book was it? Was it Infinity?
I think it was at the very end.
Because I couldn't figure out what book
about,
it was in.
No, are you talking about just the introduction of Terrigen Mists? Randy, you're talking.
I
want to
know when did it start poisoning mutants? When did that happen?
That I don't know.
That either happened right as Secret Wars was... basically as the post-Secret Wars books were kicking off. But it could happen in, like, the point one issue.
It's a new thing. Yeah, I know it's a new thing, but everybody's treating it as if it's a thing. Right. And I've never seen it introduced. Like, I didn't see the issue where Beast discovered
it
or whatever.
We read that it was going to happen and we knew about it, but Beast was just sort of
analyzing it in one of the issues of New Avengers.
Extraordinary X-Men Begins, which is where it has a very notable effect. Yeah. It's already kind of doing its problem.
Now, I guess we are at that eight months later stage, so maybe it's one of those things that happened during those eight months.
It's an immediate res story.
But this issue also proposes another sort of faction of mutant who basically wants to not be in this world and sort of cryogenically freeze themselves.
They want to opt out until things get better.
Opt out until things get better.
That seems like it's like a pretty good option.
Yeah. Well, Magneto doesn't agree with that.
I gotta say, if I lived in that world, I'd be like, what Magneto says goes.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go up against him.
But this is a definitely more ruthless team, sort of. They're kind of holding themselves in check a little bit.
A little bit.
I mean, Sabretooth, I think, feels more like
what
Age of Apocalypse.
What is bringing him into it? I thought he was just... I figured he vowed to no man.
It feels more like Age of Apocalypse Sabretooth, that creed, where he's a little bit more...
Code of Honor?
But it
definitely
isn't. I have
a question. So they're on Earth?
How are they
not dying of Terrigen Mist problems?
I don't know.
Okay.
That has not been addressed
yet. I'm curious. And then I have one other question. Is there a suggestion that the other X-Men teams know about them, or are they essentially a renegade team?
They're taking the name. The other X-Men have gone underground.
They probably didn't ask.
They basically
went to Limbo, because that's where all the X-Men
team literally
is.
Went to Limbo, yes.
But no, I thought it was a fun first issue. Thought Colin Bunn got the characters pretty well. I know Bunn was actually writing Magneto for his main book.
I like that.
So and I feel like it's a good transition to make him...
He was writing Sinestro, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He likes the bad guys.
Seems like he likes the bad guys. I'll have to give it a read.
The art here is by Greg Land, and Greg Land actually does a great job with it.
Yeah, Greg Land's art is pretty good here.
I feel like he is evolving his style. You know what's weird is when I was just flipping through it, it's going slightly more clean line, just a little bit more, and not quite so hatched and over-rendered.
Yeah.
And so that made me think of Stuart Immonen when he veers a little more cartoony.
Sure.
Not full-on next wave, but a little bit more in that ballpark.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Dave, what is your cheater pick?
All right, my cheater pick is a little bit unusual, but I like the first issue of this, and here we are hitting the second issue of IDW's Star Trek Starfleet Academy book. Now, this is a pretty light read. It's not a great comic, but it's one that I'm having fun with. And I'm not a huge fan of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek verse, because I got my feet entrenched in classic Trek and Next Generation. But it's a fun concept. What you're seeing here is two sort of interweaving stories, although I don't think they actually interweave until at the end of this issue. So you were like, when are these going to connect? One is a when Kirk and his crew were cadets. It focuses on a story with Uhura, and where she's picked up an unusual signal from deep space that seems to be I can't remember if it's a warning or like a signal from someone who was dying, but it was notable enough that it sets up a sort of a bigger mystery that as she investigates, she's finding classified Starfleet stuff that she has to break into. Chekhov is the classmate she's trying to rope into it, and he's not so sure about it, so she eventually has to call on Kirk, because he will definitely do crazy stuff.
Sure.
Anyway, it's surprisingly fun. They seem to have a good voice on the characters, and, you know, the new movies, the Abrams movies, one of the things that they were pretty good at is keeping, you know, their energy and having a sense of humor, which I think is always... When you're trying to get the mainstream audience, prior to the Abrams movies, the Star Trek IV, what was the Voyage Home?
Yeah.
Was the best selling area, the highest money making Star Trek movie of them all, and was certainly the one that had the most overt humor. So that's become kind of a thing for these, and I think they do a good job with it in this. I like the art on it. It's, I don't know quite how to describe it. It's kind of a clean line style. It's a little bit cartoony, not wildly so, but a little more cartoony than I think people are used to with Trek.
To me, it looks, and then you guys are going to tell me I'm wrong, maybe, but like a more cartoony Pia Guerra.
You know, I can actually see that. The faces especially have a kind of a strong realistic quality, especially when they're doing the Kirk stuff. And I think you're right to resemble the clean line art. Also, a little bit of Javier Pulido. You see what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
But it is cartoonier in there's a secondary flashback, and that's a bunch of new Academy recruits who's well, it follows several of them. There's this Vulcan. There's some other aliens. There's somebody who's about to leave Starfleet Academy, and she's convinced to take part in these sort of academic games, you know, which also includes like, you know, phaser fights and stuff. It's essentially a academic contest, and you're basically getting the kind of group bonding with her and the other recruits. There's kind of a fun, I don't know, almost like, I want to say Mass Effect vibe. You know how the when you have the full crew and you got them. Who's the doctor? Solus.
Yeah.
There were just fun interplay between the personalities. They're actually a pretty fun group to see. And eventually, their story arc, which takes place 2 years after the other Uhura's one, is starting to intersect. Anyway, a lightweight book, but for those of you who have some fondness for the movie or just Star Trek in general, I'd say give it a shot.
Cool. All right. Also on my list this week, Nova number 3, which I skipped over issue 2 and then went back. And Nova number 3 is basically the all-new Avengers. It's Miss Marvel, Nova, and Spider-Man out doing Avengers-y type things and having a day out. And really, really fun. I like that one a lot. The new Star Wars Obi-Wan and Anakin number 1. A-Force number 1 returns after Secret Wars because one of the lead characters, the Singularity, she remembers Secret Wars, remembers all these characters, none of whom remember her at all.
It's weird. That's almost a Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, who was the person who remembered that?
Psycho Pirate.
That's so weird, but yes.
Lone Wolf 2100 number 1, which is a post-apocalyptic take on the classic manga. Fade Out number 12, which finishes out Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' noir story. Star Wars number 14, which is the penultimate part of Vader Down. Number 6 is Vader number 15, which was supposed to be out this week. Diamond somehow misshipped it to everyone across the country, got like a very, very slim number of their copies, so we basically don't have any this week.
Right, it got eaten up by subscriptions.
Yeah, and not all. It just,
yeah,
we got a tiny, tiny amount. So we will be getting it next week, as will most places.
Yep. Sorry about that. We're trying to get it to you as fast as we can because we love this story.
We're not happy about it either.
Yeah.
But the penultimate part does feature a Wookiee fight. Doctor Strange number 4, which continues on and introduces some really interesting stuff about what Doctor Strange does and particularly what magic has done to his diet, which I thought was an interesting thing.
Huh.
Paper Girls number 4, Brian K. Vaughan, Cliff Chang, 80s sci-fi time travel girls adventure. I don't know what's happening in this book. I just don't. But I love it. It's really fun, and it's definitely a continuing mystery. Spider-Man 2099 number 5, which has Spider-Man and Captain America 2099 in modern times going up against the Bounty Hunter Venture from 2099 in modern times.
At which point he becomes Spider-Man 2016.
Yes. Spidey number 2, which is flashback stuff. It's young Spider-Man versus Sandman. And also has a little bit more of the continuing of Spidey being tutored, or Peter and Gwen tutoring each other.
Not a euphemism.
Nope, not a euphemism. Howard the Duck number 3, which has Howard confronting his female counterpart from another dimension.
Okay.
It continues to be weird as hell. And then for people who have been picking up the Pathfinder hardcovers, there's not the games, but the comics. I've been really enjoying these, and they've been mostly written by Jim Zub, I think, wrote the first few. He's the guy who did Skull Kickers and Wayward. These are mostly written by game writers, like including Eric Mona, who's one of the big Pathfinder writers. And this new version, Volume 4, is Origins, so it has origins of the iconic characters, their Ranger and their Rogue and all this kind of thing. And these are fun stories, and I always like these hardcovers, which are formatted like the Pathfinder books.
Right, it looks like a hardcover model.
And in addition to having the 6 stories, it has all the variant covers, it has some game material. They're nice little books if you're a Pathfinder fan at all. I definitely recommend them. Nick, what else is on your list?
I have the 5th issue of Deadpool, which sees sort of the ending of the first story arc. The 4th issue of Contest of Champions, which is a huge focus on Stick, the Daredevil character. The 1st issue of the Rocket Raccoon and Groot book. By Scotty Young and Philippe Andrade.
Was he doing Groot before?
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah. Have those individual books completed?
Yes. Those books are done, and this is the new one.
It was basically a Rocket book, a group book, and now it's a team book.
Now it's a Rocket and group book.
Okay. The second issue of the Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yep.
The Greg Pak and Frank Cho book. And then the third issue of the Ultimates, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I'm really looking forward to.
Dave, anything else on your list?
The only other things I've got... actually, the only other thing... Y'all mentioned Doctor Strange. Is the Swamp Thing number one. It's actually one of six. It's a six-issue miniseries from original Swamp Thing creator Len Wein.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much this is taking into account the New 52 one, whether it's like a side version or takes that into account but calls back to his earlier incarnation, or if Len Wein is running with the new version. But I got the vibe flipping through it that it was something of his classic take on it.
Hmm.
That famously kind of made the name of Bernie Wrightson, the great horror comic artist. And Kelly Jones is the artist on this, who a lot of people remember for those covers of Batman getting his back broken in the 90s.
Yep.
And also for the Batman vampire stories that came out from Elseworlds at the time. Anyway, he does good kind of macabre stuff. He's clearly influenced by Bernie Wrightson, although he does a more exaggerated version of it. But he's the artist on it, which is, I think, a fun nod to Bernie's style and mark on the series. So I'm looking forward to giving it a try.
All right. That wraps up our comics talk for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about our previews overview for stuff coming up in March. All right, we are doing our previews overview, which is a feature we've been doing for a few months here. We go through our Diamond catalog of previews, which is available for sale, but we also use it as our ordering catalog. It's basically everything Diamond has for that month.
Yep.
We usually order. It's mostly 2 months in advance. In some cases, like trades, it's a little further advanced. In the case of like toys and stuff, it can be like 6 or 8 months. But
Basically,
we're ordering everything we're going to be getting in store in March or a little bit later. And we're going through looking at stuff that we think you might want to consider pre-ordering.
Yep, we're just going to kind of bounce around the round table this stuff.
Yep. Dave, why don't you start us off?
All right. I've got this flipped open to a Predator miniseries called Predator Life and Death, coming out from Dark Horse Comics. Now, the notable thing on this series is that Dan Abnett's writing it.
Mm.
Let's see. It does seem to – it seems to very specifically take into account I mean, I guess it's involving stuff from Prometheus, and like they clearly are all meshing all that together.
Mm-hmm.
But their description of it is this. Colonial Marines on the planet Tartarus battle extraterrestrial hunters over the possession of a mysterious horseshoe-shaped spaceship of unknown origin. I presume this is the horseshoe-shaped ship that we've seen so often in the
Marines
movies. The Weyland-Yutani rep wants the ship, and the Marine captain wants to protect her crew. But neither objective is likely when a band of predators attacks.
Yep.
Anyway,
it's Colonial Marines versus Predators, which is kind of cool.
Yep, and it's for me, it's all about like seeing what Abnett can do with it. He's good with sci-fi action.
Yeah,
and especially military type stuff.
Yeah, well, and the Colonial Marines is one of those enduring things from Aliens. So,
yeah. Which itself was like an influence of the
Starship Troopers. Yeah. Nick, what you got?
I'm actually going to go with some plush creatures that.
What?
I know. You know, I thought you guys... I didn't see a ton in DC, but there were some cool plush creatures, and these are the DC Super Pets.
Oh, yeah?
They're going to have two new ones. The one is Ace, Batman's...
Ace the Bat Hound. Sure, that makes sense. Perfect, huh?
And the other one is Wonder Woman's Kangaroo.
Sure, Wonder Woman's Kangaroo. That
Jumpa.
Makes equal sense.
Jumpa. Which is... they're just kind of awesome and cute. We have two other ones. We've got Dexstar and Streaky.
Yep.
And I think these are great. They come packaged with the sort of... all their, specs on the back and sort of the DC Super Pets.
Is it from the DC Super Pets encyclopedia that
it
came
is.
Out? Which was the greatest guidebook of all time.
It may have been.
And still floating around. People, even if you don't think you need it...
You need it. Yeah, I have it.
And these are the physical representations of the characters from that book. So
yep.
They're cute. They're lovable. You should have
get
them.
Get them for your kids. Get them for yourself.
Yeah.
Had your kids, had your wife.
All right. So my pick, also a DC, since we're starting off up there, is a trade I never thought we were going to see. Because a while back, DC sort of just banned their Elseworlds, which is sort of their what-ifs. And it seemed like editorial just didn't like them. And
which is crazy because Elseworlds was a blast.
It's a fun idea. It was basically you take a world where things exist differently. Yep. So they're doing
also going to get Pirate Batman.
They're doing a collection. It's called Elseworlds Batman Volume 1. And this collection includes Batman Holy Terror, not the Frank Miller one. This is one written by sci-fi author Alan Brennert. And it is basically Bruce Wayne is a religious zealot in this world where the church sort of rules everything. And he finds
full-on theocracy.
And he discovers some disturbing things. It's got great art by Norm Breifel. It was his first painted graphic novel. Really good. Also included in here, Dark Joker the Wild, which is a fantasy one where it's like, it's like Joker is like a evil wizard and Batman's a knight. And In Darkest Night, which is what if Batman got the Green Lantern ring.
Yep.
And then Robin 3000, number 1 and 2, which was a fun bit where Batman and Robin had been sort of forgotten in the year 3000, and this new kid found the Batcave and all the technology and became the new Robin. There's some really fun stuff in here, and I hope to see even more of it.
What's interesting about that isn't a very eclectic choosing of ones. There's so much to choose from in Elseworlds. I mean, they must have, over the years, if you added them all up, including that when they did all the annuals with them, they have like scores of stories.
Yes, many stories, and I'm hoping we see lots more.
Yeah.
But this one, like I say, Holy Terror is probably my favorite of all the Elseworlds I've read, and I have that Darkest Night, and I also have The Joker of the Wild, and I think those are all really good. So definitely worth a read if you like sort of alternate world stories and Batman. Dave, what's your next pick?
I'm going to run with y'all's DC thing, and I'm going to throw out another trade paperback here. This is The Flash by Grant Morrison and Mark Miller.
Yep.
I have not read this material. Randy, I believe you have spoken pretty decently
of it. I've read the first few issues. I liked it okay.
Morrison had one of the defining Flash moments, or several Flash moments, in his JLA run.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't... I liked Wally before then, but I think he'd kind of fallen off my radar, like, for a decade or more. And so I will be very curious to check in on these ones.
This is 12 issues, right? To collect the whole run?
They say 130 through 141, plus some crossover issues.
Yeah, that's the whole...
I'm guessing it's the whole thing.
That's their whole run.
Yeah, $20 trade, 336 pages.
It's pretty good.
Yep. I forget that there was a time when Grant Morrison and Mark Miller were friends.
Yes.
Before they had a Scottish schism. I'm looking forward to trying that one out.
Nick, what's up for you next?
Another DC book. This is actually just one of their single issues, if I can find it real quick.
Page 114, perhaps, if you're thinking of the same thing I'm thinking of.
No.
Dun, dun, dun.
See, I wrote page numbers down on mine.
Oh, you guys are just so...
You're looking for page 94, by the way.
Okay. Yes, 94. Which is the new Legends of Tomorrow number 1, which focuses on Firestorm, the Metal Men, Metamorpho, and weirdly Sugar and Spike.
Sure,
because you need some odd ones in there.
You know what's interesting is of the people in this, the only one who's actually in the show Legend of Tomorrow is Firestorm.
Right. You don't know, the Metal Men could show up.
They may need to work on their synchronicity.
Yeah, a little bit.
Product synergy.
Yeah, I mean, but it's got people like Jerry Conway and Lynn Wein writing on Keith Giffen.
Yep.
I don't know how Aaron Lopresti is as a writer. I know I love his artwork.
Yeah.
So the cover that they show is by Lopresti. But anyways, I have some fondness for a lot of these characters. So we'll see what they can do with it.
Is this an anthology series?
It's just one powerhouse, one colossal comic.
Yeah.
Okay.
It basically says it's four powerhouse tales in one colossal comic, as some of comic's most legendary talents launch new tales of Firestorm, Metamorpho, Metal Men, and Sugar and Spike.
Yeah, it's a big 80-page book.
The creators who wanted to work with some of their more obscure characters got their shot.
Yeah.
I'm going to cheater pick something on top of that.
Okay.
Because I don't even know if this is a new status quo or not, or if we've even talked about this. But I see that this issue number 18 of New Suicide Squad has Tim Seeley on the writing.
Oh, interesting.
Do we know about this?
No.
I like Tim Seeley.
Yeah, I just jotted it down. There's not really an indication of whether it's like a new status quo or what, but because Seeley has definitely been on our radar before, and we like the Suicide Squad on occasion, it seemed worth note. The synopsis for the issue, which again, doesn't mention his participation, so maybe it's just a one-shot, but for all I know, he could be the new writer, says, officially killed in action, the Suicide Squad considers what to do with their newfound freedom, but not for long as their mysterious liberator reveals his own dark reasons for aiding them in their escape, reasons that drag the members of Task Force X deep into the heart of evil in the DC Universe.
Huh.
So,
well, this month is a lot of, because of the way New 52 relaunched, a lot of issues are hitting their number 50 this month.
Okay.
And so I think Suicide Squad, even though it isn't one of them, I think they may be using this as an issue to put new creative teams on or do big things. For example, in my cheater pick that I'm going to do before I do my actual pick, Batman number 50 and Superman number 50 come out this week. And in both of those, they're pretty notable status quo changes. Batman's going to be back to being Batman, not a guy in a suit. And Superman's going to be back to being Superman, not a guy in a t-shirt.
He's like, I can take the t-shirt off.
Yep.
I feel like I should have a cheater pick of a cheater pick, but I don't.
That was your picks. All right, so my next pick is not a DC book. I'm going to jump ahead to Image, and that is it's a trade paperback of a book that we talked about earlier in this podcast, and that is Paper Girls, the Image book that's the 80s throwback sci-fi weirdness.
Brian Vaughn's book. Yep.
And the first trade, you can click the first five issues. We've seen four of those so far, and they're very good. They have really nice art by Cliff Chang. And at five issues, it's going to be one of their $10 intro trades, which is
sexy,
really cool. Dave, what's your next pick?
I'm jumping backwards.
What?
Going back to Dark Horse.
Okay.
They have Rebels, the American Revolution series from Brian Wood, has getting its first trade. Now, I think the interesting thing on this for me is that they're not breaking it up into parceling it out into smaller units. They are actually collecting the first 10 issues of this, which is a pretty big trade. So it's slightly pricey at $25, but it's kind of like this is how they tend to do trades nowadays. Usually it's how they'll go back and collect Vertigo stuff after the fact.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a vote of confidence for this one from Dark Horse, or maybe just a test on their part. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to pick it up. We've talked about Rebels before, but basically there is an ongoing story. Obviously, the subtitle of this, A Well-Regulated Militia, might just have some bearing on current events. I don't know which ones, but there could be some bearing. But there is a central story, and then there are asides, and they show how the war interweaves between the lives of all sorts of disparate people, including those who are less represented in traditional narratives about this. So, women, people of color, etc. And I've some of the one-shots that I've read, like the... There was one about a lady who was a printed propaganda leaflets for the revolution, and, basically what her life was like. I've really liked some of those one-shots. There was also one about a Native American who worked as a boy on building a fort when they were sort of allied with... the Americans, and then later finds himself at odds with them, when he's like in his 20s.
Right.
And, but having some fondness for the people he grew up with and being sort of, torn loyalties. Anyway, I like the series quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to reading the full thing.
All right, Nick?
Okay, my next one is a Image book, and I first kind of caught my eye because of the art, which is by, fantastic, very talented artist Kyle Baker.
Legendary
Kyle Baker at this point. But it is a book entitled Circuit Breaker, number one. It's a mini-series of five issues, written by Kevin McCarthy, which I'm not super familiar with.
I don't know the name.
But the concept alone kind of really is fun. It says, when the heroic robots that saved Japan during World War IV... or five, are outlawed, they turn against mankind, waging a campaign of terror across the last city of Earth. And then, of course, the creator of a lot of the robots creates one final one, and it's very Astro Boy-ish, but it's, like, modeled after his granddaughter, and he kind of tasks her with the mission of stopping these other giant robots. Uh-huh. So, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of Astro Boy. The art looks amazing.
Kyle Baker's so good.
Yeah.
He really is.
So this is not the story of Marvel's Circuit Breaker robot that or the
from
woman
Transformers.
From Transformers.
It's not that character. I would like to see her again.
That's
at
some obscure
some
shit,
point.
Right?
Yeah, it's obscure reference. She was in Secret Wars 2, sir.
What?
Yep.
That's she's crazy.
Beyonder made her bow to him and explain why she hated robots.
She just don't like Transformers. She just don't dig on Transformers.
Don't dig on Transformers. That's all. All right. My pick is a also an Image pick. It's a new book called Power Lines. This is another one. This is a creator that people may know. He did Five Weapons. He did Bomb Queen. He's done a variety of things. He's been working on independent comics since like the 90s. His name is Jimmy Robinson. He's a writer-artist, and his work really runs the gamut from sort of indie sci-fi to, right now he's doing The Empty, which is sort of weird European sci-fi, to Bomb Queen, which was basically like a parody of...
the 90s Bad Girl.
Yeah.
And yet also kind of reveled
in it, yeah.
Comic too.
Well, Power Lines is another diversion for him. This is about a local street hood surviving in a crime-infested ghetto whose life is turned around when an ancient magic grants him superhuman powers, but the powers only work in the upscale white community. And I'm like, that is crazy high concept. I really, because it's definitely getting into the racial politics and all that kind of thing. Jimmy Robinson, by the way, is African American.
They even specifically say sort of that it's racially charged.
Yeah, gritty, racially charged, streetwise drama. Jimmy Robinson has some of the wildest imagination, like the best idea for concept I've ever seen. And I think his execution is good. Like, Five Weapons was very much what Rick Remender's doing with Deadly Class, was a little lighter in tone.
Uh-huh.
And The Empty is definitely big, wild sci-fi. But he does these crazy ideas. He writes them, he finishes them up, and then he goes on. So this will probably be – this is a six-issue miniseries. It'll probably be a – you know, that'll complete the story. But what an interesting concept to explore, and yeah, from a very talented creator. So I'm very excited about this. Dave, what's your next pick?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to run with the Image Ball, yep, take that from you. This is one I don't know quite what to make of, but it's a new Image book called The Discipline.
Yeah.
It's written by Peter Milligan, who what's his best? Shade from yeah, Vertigo? Yep. What else is he known
well,
for?
Notably early on in Vertigo when he was doing Shade, he did a book called The Extremist,
uh-huh,
which is about someone getting lost in an S&M kind of under subculture. So I definitely has an interest. I think this is him going back to
like
that,
like the continuation of it. And yeah, I will say part of the interest is the artist, Leandro Fernandez,
yeah,
who I've liked as far back as his Queen and Country early days, but who's really just he has improved by leaps and bounds, and that was probably his best stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it was
but
gorgeous.
The preview work here looks beautiful. Like it will be the rival of that at the worst.
It's that Brazilian style, like Eduardo Rizzo does.
It's like right,
shadows and light, and lots of sexiness.
Yeah, if you have read 100 Bullets or any of the other projects, the Batman stuff that Eduardo Rizzo has done, you'll have a sense. And I'm just going to read their description of the yep, book itself. Between fighting her sister and hating her husband, Melissa still finds time to fall in lust with a stranger who's an awful lot more than he seems. What appears to be a simple seduction is revealed as something more dark, something much darker and more dangerous. This controversial and erotically charged tale of sex, death, and metamorphosis begins with an explosion of carnality and weirdness.
You know, I noticed that cover. It's like it's a woman with her sort of bra showing under her shirt,
yep,
and there's a clawed hand on her. So there's definitely yep, some monster stuff in here.
Yes, although is that symbolic?
I don't think so. I think there's monsters.
You think there's monsters?
Well, they talk about metamorphosis.
Yeah, I could easily see it. I want to see an explosion of carnality in my comics.
Sure.
And this one promises that, so I'm going to see if they can deliver.
I will also say, those of you who are digging Sunstone, this is going to be a different thing. Sunstone is very much a sort of romantic comedy type
right,
take on that kind of thing. This
so
seems to be a little
bad,
more... darker, grittier.
Well, do you remember American Virgin for DC?
Yeah.
That one, although that one had its lighter moments for sure, also had a darker tinge going on for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
And was great.
This has a little this seems noirish to me. This looks right up my alley. I'm very excited about this.
Leandro Fernandez brings a sort of noirish style out of the gate.
That's true. The art looks amazing.
All right, so that's my pick. Nick, what you got?
I'm going to go with another Image book, but this
okay,
is a collection. This is the first volume of the I Hate Fairyland.
Yep.
Scotty Young's book about a young girl gets trapped in Oz, sort of...
an Oz Wonderland
fairyland
kind of place, crazy.
And gets stuck there for 30 years and doesn't age and goes insane.
Yep.
And just has had it with everything and starts killing
everything.
It's like
a cartoonier version of the little girl in an Interview with a Vampire.
A little bit. If you mix that with Looney Tunes and lots of blood. Because that's pretty much what it is. It's got a great sense of humor. Scotty Young gets to sort of stretch his legs a little bit. And, yeah, he gets to draw cute things like he did on all the little baby covers that Marvel did. But he gets to draw lots of blood. And
it's
things
like those
exploding.
Cute things detonate, yeah.
Yes,
those cute things detonating.
What if they detonated?
And I think he revels in it a little bit. I think he really does. And I really enjoy reading it. So I suggest you pick up this first one.
I'm going to jump ahead to Marvel a little bit. I'm sure I'll be going back. But I want to mention this. People may not know, one of my favorite characters is Hawkeye, Green Arrow. I like all the Archers. But one of my absolute favorite characters is Hawkeye's ex-wife, Mockingbird.
Yep.
I was super excited to see her being played by one of my favorite actresses, Adrian Palicki, on S.H.I.E.L.D. And they are doing a Mockingbird ongoing series. This is based on the one-shot they did for S.H.I.E.L.D. Same writer, Chelsea Kane, who is apparently a novelist. I may have to look into her books. And the art is a new person, Kate Nimzik. I don't know her, but
Joelle Jones did the cover.
She's doing the covers, but basically it's Mockingbird, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. A string of missions have gone wrong. She's going, you know, deeper into S.H.I.E.L.D.'s medical and recovery network, and it's a Mockingbird ongoing. It's going to be spy actiony. The cover looks great.
If I ever said there was a book explicitly written for Randy, this is
probably it. Yeah.
What do you call her, like, staffs that she brings the beat
staves
down with?
They're just both. It's just about
battle
staves.
They're not escrimistic.
Yeah. No. That's Nightwing. Nightwing.
I'm just checking. I don't know the subtle differences.
These are
between
battle staves.
She has battle staves that can link up into one staff.
Which one is a Beta Club? That's Caliban.
But yeah, this looks super cool, and I'm very excited about it. Dave, what else you got?
You know, they should do a crossover where, you know what, for some reason I was thinking that she was DC because, of course, of her Black Canary connection.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, she should meet up with Black Widow, and I'm like, oh, I guess they have met. But have they teamed up anytime recently?
Well, they're both exes of Hawkeye, too, so.
Yeah, I was just wondering if they've done, like, mission to get
but that's a good way for me to sneak in a cheater pick, as you mentioned it. There's also a new Black Widow book launching this month.
I was gonna mention that one.
I know, but I'm stealing it.
You suck.
Dave made it. Dave transitioned. Mark Waid and Chris Samnee are doing it.
Yeah, no,
this is the people who did that Daredevil run we loved. It's Black Widow's on the run from S.H.I.E.L.D. from everybody. Black Widow on the run from spies sounds great. Chris Samnee drawing it sounds great.
I was going to say, you have to mention Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, and I'm there.
And I got to think at some point they're going to do a Black Widow Mockingbird crossover. It has to. Especially if Mockingbird's working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and Black Widow's on the run from S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
It's got to happen.
Although, knowing with Dave's craziness, if Marvel and DC ever crossed over again, seeing a Black Canary Mockingbird team up would be
sure.
Awesome.
Well, because Mockingbird is their Black Canary in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. Or a Birds of Prey, S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave, what you got?
Next up, I'm sticking with Image because we didn't get around to it, or I don't think we did. The first volume of Black Magic is hitting.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
This is Greg Rucka's book that we talked up, I believe, as recently as last week. About the woman who is both a witch and a detective. And how it slowly unveiling mystery as to exactly what magic actually means in this world,
right.
How it's intersecting with her life, and what sort of strange conspiracy is drawing her out. Anyway, I've been really liking it so far. This is going to collect the first 5 issues. I would definitely suggest picking it up in single issues as it's coming out now. But if you're holding out for the trade, it's coming soon. It's also one of those $10 trades.
Yep, which is cool. Nick, what you got?
I have a new series by Titan Comics.
Really? Okay.
Yes, it is the Independence Day #1. Welcome to Earth, indeed. Written by Victor Gishler, who is a name I know, and I've read a lot of his stuff.
He did the X-Men vs. Vampire stuff a while back.
Okay. I really just want to read this because I like Independence Day. to be honest, I don't know the art by is it Steve Scott? But
no, Steve Scott did New Warriors way back in the day.
Oh, did he?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's
he was one of the many New Warriors relaunch artists.
Well, you know, there is the. I'm trying to remember the kind of.
See, this is why you put page numbers on things, Nick.
I like to live in the moment. I don't care about it. It's Titan Comics. It's in the T's. It should be right here. It should be their biggest release.
You know, people, you might wonder, why is Nick taking so long to find a comic book? It's partly because he went past it. But also it's because this catalog
is like
700 pages long.
It says,
and we order from it every month.
Yeah.
Yep.
What we sacrifice for you people.
Yeah.
So basically, the synopsis says, as our world unites against invaders from beyond the stars, beneath the Atlantic Ocean, another mysterious craft prompts a top-secret investigation by U.S. military, one which could prove the key to humanity's survival, or its ultimate destruction.
So when is this? Is this post-Independence Day movie?
Yeah, post-Independence Day, pre-Independence Day 2.
Pre-resurgence, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Apparently there is another aliens ship found, which is kind of cool.
See, because if they were doing stuff that was like, I kind of wish they were doing like the, here's the first test run of the tech or stuff like that. But I guess they probably can't do too much tying directly into the movie that's coming out.
And plus, it's going to be underwater, so it's probably going to have some abyss-like thing.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's sounded like a fun thing to me.
All right. I have a another... let's see, what am I going to do with this? I am going to go with another DC one. I'm going to jump back to DC.
Oh, my God.
Because, I just want a quick mention, I have talked about the Suicide Squad trades, the classic ones that they've done over and over again. But the one they're putting out, Volume 3, that is coming out in April...
Let me say... Volume 3, we're finally getting the entire run.
Yeah, we're going to get the whole run. If they're 3 volumes, then they're going to finish it.
Yes.
It's called Rogues. I have a fondness for that for some reason.
Uh-huh.
But this story includes the return of the Jihad.
Yeah.
Captain Boomerang, who's been wandering around pretending to be Mirror Master. I believe it has the team running into... I think this is when they started getting into some of the election stuff, or right before it. So this is where they're starting to get some of the stuff I really liked in that book, in that run.
Yeah, admittedly, the second volume, as we noted, had a few slightly bonkers
had some weird stuff.
Crossovers in it. Sometimes not particularly the fault of the book, but just the fact that it got caught up in crossovers, and sometimes it just happens at Marvel and DC, and you're like, okay, that one went a little bit weird there. There's still good stuff in that volume, some great stuff.
The first volume had some weird stuff in there, but there's a few
bonker stories.
Yep.
This, I believe, is moving towards the book at its strongest.
Yeah, this is starting to be where this is what it is, and this is when it's at its best.
And this is just me meandering a bit, but didn't the first one have the Manhunter stuff?
No, that's the second one.
Was that the second one?
Yeah, the second one had the Manhunters and the Doom Patrol crossover. Over and a lot of weird stuff in it.
Okay.
The first one was great. The first one was all great stuff. The second one was good, but had some weird stuff in it. Dave?
So I'm going to go with Oni Press.
Oh.
I'm going to... a book they've got called Another Castle.
Yeah, we've got a preview copy of that.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I need to check it out. I'm not going to bother to read the synopsis on this one, but anybody who, if you've ever played a Mario game, the phrase "another castle" will resonate with you.
Yeah.
It's what the princess says every time you rescue her, up until the very end. You're like, "Sorry, the princess is in another castle."
Yep.
This looks like a bit of a deconstruction on that, where you've got sort of a princess who's got to basically save herself in a sort of Mario-esque sort of, you know, magical kingdom. The vibe I'm getting as I'm looking at it is a little bit like, what's the one that's the Sailor Moon sort of...
Zodiac Star Force. There's a quote from that writer.
And there's a quote from that writer. The art looks very similar to me, to it too. But the same way that was both homage to, Sailor Moon and also not subversion, but kind of an exploration, a slightly deeper exploration of what it might mean.
In the same way Astro City is to superheroes, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's both celebrating it and wanting to go just a little bit deeper into the themes and stuff. It looks like this is going to kind of do with a sort of Super Mario action-adventure fantasy thing. As again, from the princess perspective, I'm guessing also some Legend of Zelda stuff will be sneaking in there. Anyway, having liked Zodiac Star Force, even though this is not the same writer... Since the fact that the Zodiac Star Force writer gives it a good quote, I'm guessing it must have something at least in that ballpark.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a shot.
All right, Nick?
Okay, well, I do have the page number on this because it's in Marvel's previews, and they are delightfully short.
It's fancy.
No, but this one is Haunted Mansion number 1.
Yep.
Which, this is sort of part of the Disney Kingdoms books. They've done, what, the Big Mountain Railroad?
Thunder Mountain Railroad. Figment.
Figment. Which is sort of some looking at some rides of DC and other concepts that they put out. And Haunted Mansion, while being a horrible, horrible movie with Eddie Murphy a while back, I try to forget that, but it comes on HBO every once in a while.
But it was a cool ride.
Is a cool, very cool ride, although I've never ridden it, but I've heard it's cool.
I have vague memories of it from when I was like 17.
Not
18.
A cool rider. That's a different
That's
thing.
Grease 2.
That's Grease 2.
But the big attraction for me here is the writer on this one, is Joshua Williamson, who writes Birthright.
And Nailbiter.
And Nailbiter, and a whole...
He has some horror chops.
He does, and he doesn't sort of, like... He writes different genres of things, too, so...
Yeah.
He's also writing Illuminati for Marvel.
Yep.
And this is art by Jorge Coahuila, or...
Yeah.
Don't recognize the name, but there's some concept art for some of the
Looks
ghosts.
Looks really nice.
And the ghosts look awesome. I just think the concept of a house filled with 999 ghosts is fun, and you can do a lot with it. And I'm excited to see what Joshua Williamson can bring to the table with this one.
Yeah.
Randy, you've been on the ride recently, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I went to Disney World, yep.
What I remember from like 20 years ago was that it was a good mixture of kind of spooky and fun. It was that sort of adventurous, spooky, that kind of Disney
Well, it scared my daughter when she was 10, although she loved it this time.
Yep.
And it scared my son this time, so, yeah.
Isn't that the one where they do this, little, like, some sort of mirror trick? So
yeah, it looks like a ghost is riding with you and taking you home.
Yeah, you, like, look to your side, and there's, like, a ghost right next to you.
Yep,
that's pretty awesome.
Fairly ingenious trick.
There's some great, some great stuff where there's, like, there's a ballroom where there's all ghosts dancing and stuff. There's some amazing design work at that in that ride. It's a really
and
fun.
And that goes back to, what, like, 50s, 60s?
No, it came around in the 80s. It was new in the 80s.
Was it?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
See, I think it's a great concept, and I think the movie was a horrible thing about a person trying to sell the mansion.
Yeah, it was somebody who didn't know what to do with the concept.
And,
yeah.
And hopefully they now know what to do.
You know, what's too bad is that that could have been a big thing. Like a great kind of spooky movie for kids. You know, kind of a Goosebumps-esque thing.
Yep. Yep.
Ah, well.
It was not.
All right.
This comic can deliver where the movie gets.
In April, Marvel's going to start collecting all these relaunches that, that we've been talking so much about.
Yep.
So if you're one of those wait-for-trade people, and I don't judge you, I'm a wait-for-trade person myself.
You're a hardcover kind of person.
That's actually true. that's harder to do if you don't own a comic shop and can't read them as well.
That's true.
But in April, we're beginning the first collection of All New, All Different Avengers by Wade Nosrar and Kubert. The first collection of Captain America, Sam Wilson. First collection of Amazing Spider-Man. First collection of Uncanny Inhumans and Uncanny Avengers. New Avengers, Contest of Champions. So basically, if you've been holding out...
Deadpool Volume 1.
I don't know what you're talking about. there's a lot of trades coming in April that will be the big ones. My big three, of course, are All New, All Different Avengers, Captain America, Sam Wilson, and Amazing Spider-Man Volume 1.
A good loadout.
Dave, what else you got?
I'm about at the end of my list, other than a few oddballs, which I think we can probably skip.
We'll do one more round, and then we'll list them off. So what's your last pick?
This is actually a Disney graphic novel. It looks like it's pretty kind of a big hardcover. It's called Star Wars The Original Trilogy, a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And if the art looks like the cover, it's actually very nice looking. It looks like a... If they had ever done a nicely animated kind of cartoon, almost I would say like in the Gargoyle style or something like that, of Star Wars, this is what it might look like. That's very appealing character designs. I assume the interiors look something like that. It's 208 pages. Now, they say they're covering the original trilogy. That's a lot to cover in just 208 pages, so they might be kind of zipping along rather quickly, but, you know, 208 pages is also not nothing.
Right.
You know, Randy, as you know, I have a huge fondness for the Star Wars manga that Dark Horse put out, which was very, you know, they covered all the moments in that and stayed very close to the script, while at the same time exercising a kind of a high degree of style with the art.
Mm-hmm.
This one is going to be more of a cursory thing, but I do enjoy kind of interpretations like that. And essentially, if we're going to see what Star Wars might have looked like as a cartoon, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, I'm curious about that one, too. Also interesting because Marvel doesn't... I thought Marvel had, like, the exclusive rights. But apparently this is, like, a bookstore thing.
Yeah, Disney's like, we're going to publish some stuff that's not you, Marvel. Ha, ha, ha.
Nick, what you got for your final pick?
For my final pick, I will pick a big event. Because I think somebody has to mention it.
Sure.
And I will pick the Avengers Standoff, Assault on Pleasant Hill... Alpha number one, which may in fact be the longest title I've seen
title.
For a comic book in quite some time.
Not the longest title I've ever seen, but it's a long title.
I saw that and I was like, "What is this?" I forget what it is.
Well,
what it is?
Basically, it starts with a team up between Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson going to a small town USA and being confronted with something they never thought possible. Craziness ensues.
Do we know what something that they thought impossible was?
No.
I'm going to put my bet down. It's Shumagorath. That's where my money is.
Cthulhu-esque.
Yep. I'm going to say that it's a lead-in because I bet that's going to somehow show up in Doctor Strange in the movie.
Maybe.
This will be like them planting some mystical seeds.
Yeah, the synopsis is Pleasant Hill looks like the perfect small-town community, but underneath the surface, a deadly secret lurks. One so explosive it will draw strange allies Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson back together to save a friend in danger and put things right. But when the combined might of the Captain Americas isn't enough, whom do they call? In the face of unspeakable evil, it's time the Avengers to assemble like never before. So this is their big event.
Yeah, it's crossing between everything. Like S.H.I.E.L.D., Avengers, all the Avengers books, S.H.I.E.L.D., Captain America, and Illuminati is in there too.
Yes, it is. So, if you want to get on board Marvel's big new event, this is where you do it.
They don't say even what the nature of it is. Like, for all we know, it could be like it's probably not, but it could be like a Skrull infiltration.
It could be anything,
right?
Like that, yeah.
I'm betting it's going to be something mystical. as a bit of a, to catch some synergy off of Doctor Strange.
There are some silhouettes down at the bottom.
Is it Shuma-Gorath?
It does not look tentacles.
I believe it is the people of the town.
Oh, yeah.
Because the thing, it's like a billboard, and it says, "Welcome to Pleasant Hill, nice place to live," and someone has spray-painted lies on top of it. Oh. And the Avengers are up against the billboard, and people are closing in on them.
Graffiti ain't cool, kids.
Yeah.
Reminds me, of course, in the G.I. Joe comics, the tradition of Springfield, yeah, the secret home of Cobra that looks like this, you know, super pleasant town on the surface.
So my final pick here is two epic collections that Marvel's doing. I really like these epic collections. We've talked about them before. They're older stuff, but the ones they're doing in particular is for two of my favorite characters, it's a Captain America one and an Iron Man one. The Captain America one collects Mark Waid's run.
Yep.
From the 90s. It's a 10 issue run. There's a crossover. There's a Thor and Iron Man and all this stuff in there as well.
But it's got
Ron Garney on art, the guy who's currently doing Daredevil.
Operation Rebirth stuff?
Man Without a Country.
Okay.
Cap basically winds up
kicked out of the United States.
Kicked out of the U.S. He's been framed and exiled.
You know, if somehow Trump were to win the presidency, what is Cap going to do in the fictional world? Is he going to, like...
I don't think Marvel's going to acknowledge that.
Is he going to go to Mexico? No, he needs to go to Mexico so he can topple the wall that Trump thinks he's going to build.
And then the Iron Man epic collection, Duel of Iron, is Denny O'Neill, Bob Harris, Peter Begillis writing. And this collects Iron Man 178 to 195. It's right about the time when Tony had battled back from alcoholism. Rhodey was still in the armor. So there were basically like two Iron Men. Rhodey was a West Coast Avenger. This is right before I started collecting Iron Man. So I've know what happens after this, and I know what happens before it, but I've never read this stuff, so I'm super excited to read it.
I believe I've got a handful of those issues, and there's some good stuff in there.
It also features Brothers Grimm, Vibro, and the Termite. Some of the weirdest villains Iron Man has ever faced.
Who are the artists?
Luke McDonnell from Suicide Squad.
Yep.
And Don Perlin, who you may know from Valiant, of all things.
Yep. Yeah, then it's definitely the era that I think I had a handful of those issues just bought off of newsstands back in the day.
This was right about the time you and I were probably just starting to buy a bunch of comics.
I have to applaud the Epic collections. They're great.
Yeah, I love the Epics. I like them better than Essentials, actually.
I have a question, Randy. On that Cap one, is that like midway in like Wade's run, or is that like the start of it?
It's the end of it.
Okay.
Because he did one that where he lost his shield, basically.
Uh-huh.
And that was the big story. He had, like, an energy shield and all that. And that was a different run. And I think that one's been collected already as an epic.
Okay. I was going to say, would I be able to come in on this one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This was his second run, basically.
Okay. It's kind of like how Frank Miller came back to do, like, Daredevil Born Again and he didn't need to release this.
Exactly.
I'm going to pick that up when it comes out.
All right. What else is on the list? Do you want to quick run down your list of other stuff?
You know, I think I've actually only got one other really sort of notable thing here.
Okay.
Back in the kind of book section in the back of the catalog, there's a Batman character encyclopedia, which I'm sure we'll be stocking. It's from DK Books. It's just what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's 208 pages of Batman and his villains. It should be super cool and well illustrated and all that fun stuff.
Well, we've got their Spider-Man one, their Avengers one. They always do a good job.
And on this page, there's actually, I guess there's technically two other things, because it's all stuff on this page. There's Are these guys known for doing, like, travel guidebooks, the Time Out Shortlist?
I don't know them.
It says Time Out Shortlist Gotham Metropolis Guidebook. It seems like these guys do maps and information, and they're basically travel guide stuff.
Yeah.
I think they do it in the real world, and they have gotten them to do it for the fictional cities of Gotham and Metropolis.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And I'm like, that sounds like a blast. I would like to see that.
Oh, cool.
And then finally, there is a... Is this a Wonder Woman? Is this a young adult graphic novel? This DC Superhero Girls... Oh, this is that new animated line that they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Wonder Woman at Superhero High. I only noticed this. I actually hadn't written this down, but it looks like it'll probably be like a, you know, young adult chapter book kind of thing. It's 240 pages, so... even though the art looks kind of like... It looks kiddier than I would have guessed for 240 pages... but it is clearly a prose novel and not a not a comic, so something I'm no doubt will be carrying and that one's kids might enjoy.
Yep. Nick, what else is on your list?
I have two number ones from Marvel. One is Hyperion number one, which sees the main character sort of trying to find himself, driving a truck across the United States. It's written by I'm blanking on who it is, but it It looks interesting. I like Hyperion. I like what James Robinson's doing with him in Squadron Supreme. I
think the character might be developing enough to stand on his own.
We'll see.
Hopefully in a way that, like, better than Sentry.
Yeah.
And the other one is International Iron Man, which is Mendes sort of buddy-copping Tony Stark with Victor Von Doom.
That's a little weird.
It's a little weird.
But we don't know quite what the status quo is going to be on Doom post-Secret Wars. He's clearly the big bad in it. Or the overseer.
Well, he's been in Invisible Iron Man.
Yeah, he's shown up.
Has he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's shown up several times.
But presumably, I mean, that's also something in effect of the Secret Wars thing.
But he's sort of played himself off as a more of a do-gooder in some ways. He's helping Tony in
definitely not aspects. The usual Doctor Doom.
He's not wearing armor.
So something happens.
Something has definitely happened. And basically, they're investigating secrets of the Marvel Universe. You know, so, kind of feels a little Warren Ellis-y, but we have Bendis.
You know, I'll say this, Nick. I'm not huge on Bendis, and I can't say the idea of Doctor Doom as a buddy book in a buddy book is immediately appealed to me. But flipping through it, I was remembering, you know, the good work that Bendis and Maleev did on Daredevil, right? It was Gatos on Alias. The art looked appealing. I thought it looked like it had a good vibe to it, so I'm going to give it a shot.
I hope it's running scared in the Marvel Universe.
I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
Read that, though.
I would totally read that. Yeah. all right. My quick list. There is a 20th anniversary hardcover of Kingdom Come, the big post-apocalyptic story, superhero story that has painted art by Alex Ross that Mark Waid wrote. It's oversized. I'm considering that one. There is the first collection of The Beauty, which is the story of a we've talked about it before. It's the STD that makes people beautiful but might have other side effects.
Yes, could be bad.
I've been really enjoying that. Third volume of Rat Queens, which is always fun. A new volume. I was surprised to see them bring pretty this. Hawkeye and Thunderbolts, which is Fabian Nicieza took over from Kurt Busiek and made Hawkeye, former villain turned hero, sort of the head of the Thunderbolts. He was the guy trying to get him to stay on the straight and narrow. Really fun superhero stuff. If you've liked any of the Thunderbolts, it's a good run. And then, of course, the Vader Down trade hits, which is a book we've all been enjoying, the crossover between Star Wars and Vader.
Yep, Vader at his baddest.
All right, that is our previews overview for the month. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and some podcasts, some other stuff. All right, we got a bit of a potpourri for you here today in terms of different topics.
Dave, do enjoy a potpourri.
Why don't you kick us off?
Are we going to talk about podcast stuff?
The Black Tapes.
Okay, cool. Now, Randy, I think you said you just quick check. You're about where I am. I think I'm like 3 or 4 episodes in.
I am midway through episode 3 of this.
Okay, so Black Tapes. This is a podcast that I think I found out about from you, Randy.
It's been floating around. It wasn't from me because I heard about it from you.
Around. Somebody must have just mentioned it to me. I don't know. So it is another, like Limetown, that sort of follows, it's like a pastiche of Serial or This American Life.
In fact, they very much reference, like, she's a producer from, what is it called? It's the National Radio Alliance, which is weird because that's the NRA.
And she's also saying she wanted to be like Terry Gross and Ira Glass, big NPR and This American Life people.
Yeah. Well, and then she was clearly one of the big wheels in this fake This American Life podcast.
Yep.
And so every time she talks to someone, they're like, oh, well, when's this going to be on the show? She's like, oh, this is actually a different show?
Yeah.
It's like a running gag, sort of.
And so, like Limetown, this essentially is what is the podcast equivalent of a found footage movie. It's meant to trick you a little bit into buying into its reality. And I think it does a pretty good job of it. I'm enjoying it. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
I'm really enjoying it.
And the basic conceit is that she was originally, the podcast had a different intent. It was supposed to be a podcast about, like,
different interesting jobs.
And so one of the first people that they were going to talk to was this guy who's a sort of noted sort of skeptic.
They were doing ghost hunting was a job.
Yeah.
And they were talking to a guy who is...
He was going to try and debunk it or whatever. Because he debunks
stuff. Dr. Richard Strand.
And he has like a clearly based on the real life person, James Randi, who actually offers like $1 million award if you can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, like prove in laboratory conditions, supernatural.
Is James Randi kind of a jerk?
He's actually not.
Okay, because they deliberately seem to be making Strand out to be kind of jerky and a little socially awkward.
Yeah, no, Randi is like, actually, he's also a famous magician, and he's got some showmanship, and he's kind of, he's like a genial old man nowadays.
This guy combines a little bit of that sort of Richard Dawkins.
He's got a little Richard Dawkins. Yeah. That's what I was telling Nick earlier. And so he was going to just comment on it, but it turns out things take some interesting turns when he enters the picture. And they find out that he, in investigating these cases to debunk things, people trying to get his $1 million prize for proving paranormal stuff, nobody's ever done it. But he does have cases that he has not been able to resolve to his satisfaction.
Yeah.
They haven't been proven. He just doesn't. He's like, he wants to follow up on them someday.
Yeah.
And so the podcast turns toward investigating these cases, which are like stored in black tapes for him. So each episode, in a way, kind of is an investigation of something from one of those tapes with his input on it.
Yeah.
But there is also an interesting ongoing story interweaving throughout about Strand himself.
Because
he's got some weird stuff going on in his life that he's not upfront about at all at first.
Yeah.
What I like about the series is, A, I think it's pretty well written.
Yeah.
Like, the characters are pretty believable.
Yeah.
And I actually like Strand.
I love Strand.
He's like... I was a little worried he was just going to be the obnoxious skeptic atheist guy at first.
Yeah.
But he is that too.
Yeah.
Not hyper obnoxious, but a little bit kind of.
But he's very brusque and has no time for superstition.
Egotistical and everything. Yeah. He's likable, and then the stuff they talked about is pretty eerie.
Yeah.
There's an interesting ghost thing in the first one.
Yep.
Randy, did you get to the thing about the upside down faces?
No, I have not gotten to this
yet. Okay, that's probably in episode 4.
Yeah, okay.
What's episode 3?
I don't know. I'm early in it.
Okay.
I have to ask, how long are these episodes?
About half an hour.
Yeah. Maybe 40 minutes?
Maybe. It's like 35 to 40.
Yep.
But there's 12 episodes out. That's season 1. It's all out there. I'm burning through them right now. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, I this is kind of a fun new genre. Podcasts are kind of getting a little self-referential, I guess, now.
Well, I already burned through Limetown and The Message, so I needed something in this vein, and The Black Tapes is the next thing
some good news. I was talking about it with my brother just yesterday, and he had listened to all of Limetown, and he was gonna listen to Black Tapes, but he decided, since I was listening to that, to check back on it later.
Yeah.
The people who make The Black Tapes apparently have another podcast with a somewhat similar theme to it. I don't know quite what the hook is, but it's called Tannis.
Okay.
T-A-N-I-S. And I downloaded the first 2 episodes literally last night. I haven't listened to them
yet. Is it about the half-elven ranger from Dragonlance?
Or is it about the substance that's in the necklace in Rosemary's Baby that's supposed to ward off evil spirits?
Or is it where the Ark of the Covenant was, because I believe in
Raiders
of the
Lost Ark? That's probably more what it is.
That's where they proposed that it began.
But I just want to point out, that's like our 5th or 6th obscure reference this podcast. I'm pretty proud of that.
I feel like we should win something.
You Tannis
Half-Elven is, I believe.
Yes, Tannis Half-Elven, that's correct.
But anyway, so yeah, it sounds like we're both pretty into
I'm digging
Black
it.
Tapes.
This one has a more interesting hook than I've on some of the other ones. I fell off of Limetown.
Did you really?
I mean, I need to go back to it. I don't have a great time to listen to podcasts.
I listen in the car.
Yeah, and I need to do that. I need to just kind of get in that mode. I usually just turn it to 98.9, and that's what I listen to.
Oh, yeah, I always listen to podcasts in the car.
I found it a little bit more, maybe I felt like the writing was more convincing or something than Limetown, but it's in that same vein.
Yeah. No, Limetown I burned through mostly on a drive up to Dallas.
And I guess that's what I need to do. I need to take a drive really to
Dallas.
Drive.
Yeah, drive to Dallas.
Specifically drive to Dallas.
Yeah.
What else we got right now?
All right. Next up is a sci-fi show that we talked a little bit about, but I don't think anyone's finished watching it.
Correct.
That is The Expanse on Sci-Fi.
It actually is on Sci-Fi. It's
and
a sci-fi show.
Nick, how much have you watched?
I've watched the 3 episodes, and the 4th episode airs tonight, and I will no doubt watch it late tonight.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of hooked. I read the first book, which was called Leviathan Wakes.
Yep, and I've read that as well.
A long time ago, and it's subsequently had, I think, 3 or 4 more?
At least 3, yes.
Volumes to come out of this sort of The Expanse story, and the show is a very close adaptation of the first book, although it does take elements of the second book and incorporate it in most of the stuff that actually happens on Earth.
Okay.
And puts it into that adds a character that shows up more in the second book, played by, I can never remember her name, she's an Indian woman.
Shura Agladishu.
She's an amazing actress.
Just a slightly older actress?
Yes.
She played one of the villains on 24.
Yeah, yeah. She's a really talented actress. I've seen her in a few different movies.
Didn't she win an Oscar for House of Sand and Fog?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
She also...
Did she really won an Oscar?
I believe. She won an Oscar for
Oric. I like the movie. I kind of thought it was one of those under the radar
movies.
She
plays sort of this UN senator.
Okay.
But... she's very driven, and there's actually a torture scene that she's involved in, and it is insanely dark.
Okay.
But I have to compliment the show and Sci-Fi for throwing a lot of money at it, because the effects are fantastic.
Okay.
The way they've envisioned the ships are very much what the book had. They're very realistic. The Mars ships are awesome looking, even though they are very kind of utilitarian.
Yeah.
Which makes sense if you're going for a hard sci-fi series.
But the way they've introduced the weaponry, sort of the hard light guns and things like that, sort of the advancement of technology, is fantastic. Also, the way they portray both people who've been born on Earth and the people who've been born on the belt or in
Mars. I was going to say we should back up a little bit. The premise of this
is
Earth. Earth is sort of taking resources from Mars, which is not happy about it.
Yes.
And there's always been sort of some tension.
The whole solar system's been somewhat colonized, or they're beginning to do operations everywhere around it.
Yeah, Mars has been colonized, and they haven't sort of like retrofitted the atmosphere or anything like that.
Right. But there's cities.
But there are, there's cities, and then there are a few other places that are sort of in-betweens, and then there's the belt, which...
The asteroid belt.
Yeah, and it's...
That's where they mine for minerals and that kind of thing.
Yeah, mine for minerals.
And people
water,
are born different in this place. Like, there's not aliens,
no,
at least at the beginning, and it's...
all humans, and... but it's interesting, sort of the physiology of, like, if you were born on Mars or born on the belt, your body would, be different because of the gravity and how it interacts with our bodies. So the people on the belt and Mars are actually... a little bit more thinner, elongated, and their bodies have a different structure to them. And the way sci-fi does it is very believable. It looks like, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I imagined it looking in the books.
So nice. The locations or the people?
The people.
And the weird thing...
Does it actually use some sort of Hobbit-type special effect to elongate
people? I don't know exactly what they do.
Or do they just hire leaner actors?
No, because it definitely looks...
slightly
abnormal.
Okay,
yeah.
So they must be doing something.
Some sort of
comedy
effect that I don't know. I wish I knew, because it's very cool, but it's just
but
visually
the effect
striking.
It's believable, though.
Extremely.
The other thing is, it's a mix of sort of a almost a noir detective. Like, it's a couple of cops on
the
belt.
Two different stories going on. There's a murder mystery noir featuring Thomas Jane.
Yep.
And sort of him as a cop. Sort of on the outs a little bit. He's kind of a drunk.
And isn't his partner from Earth?
Yes.
And they're on the belt.
Yes. And he gets tasked by his superior officer as sort of a throwaway job to find a woman.
Yeah.
Who is the daughter of a very rich socialite that sort of has gone missing.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where he is. And then the other story takes place focusing on a basically a mining ship. Really? They're coming back with water from... some asteroid, and they get hit with a distress signal from a ship, and they don't know what it is. A lot of the people on the ship just basically want to say we didn't hear it, but the main character, Holden, has sort of an honor system, and he feels very much that they have to check it out. So he and, like, a small group of people, about four or five others, go out and take a look at the ship, and it kind of goes downhill for them after that, because it kind of drags them into this whole other story about... I don't actually want to say.
No, there's what's interesting is it's a blend of sort of a smaller story and a bigger story, and they all sort of dovetail, and it's a really interesting sort of conspiracy sci-fi.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot of the actors that they've gotten, and actually it works.
It makes it more believable.
Thomas Jane is the biggest name in it, but I think he does a good job with the character he's given.
I saw just maybe like 15 or 20 minutes of it online, just taking a peek in, and I liked what I saw. This was several weeks ago. I need to check it out. I need to just check it out.
I would recommend watching the show. I would recommend reading the books. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Is it concluded as a book series?
No, it's still ongoing.
Like I said, I think it's on book four or book five. It's
getting into some Game of Thrones territory.
I think they envisioned it as being six books. Okay. I think that's what they did. Okay. Six or seven.
And then is he going to make it eight books, and then is he going to not finish it?
It's the author's name is James A. Corey, which is actually two different authors blending their names.
Right.
So, yeah.
I have been watching on Amazon. Transparent season two came on. Transparent is about Jeffrey Tambor playing a man who, after his kids are all grown and he and his wife got divorced, he is transitioning to being transgender. And it sort of it flashes back to his
Jeffrey Tambor's a really good actor.
Yeah, it flashes back to his life when he was sort of hiding this from everyone. And there's a great guest turn by the occasional appearing Bradley Whitford as another trans person. Yeah. And his wife is Judith Gold from Who's the Boss, I believe?
Judith Light.
She plays
the blonde or the redhead?
She was the blonde.
Okay.
She is now playing she's the grandmother of the family. She's playing his ex, and it's really interesting. She's great in it. And then he's got several kids. They're all one of them is a lesbian who's sort of on the outs with her husband. She's just discovered she's a lesbian, and she's having an affair with another woman. Uh-huh. And his son is in the music business and is kind of narcissistic. They're all sort of self-involved people.
Sure.
And when I watched the first season, it definitely is
so
one of the marathon.
This is clearly not going to be a series that, in trying to move an agenda forward, puts its people up on a pedestal.
No.
It's going to be like, nope, they're...
Is it more of a comedic?
I'm used to Jeffrey Tambor doing comedic roles.
It's got a comedic, it's sort of a darkly comedic edge to it, but it's definitely a drama as much as anything else. Yeah. But it definitely is a lighter drama. It's not like all about how terrible everything is. It's about all these people. It's not Curb Your Enthusiasm,
right?
But it's not unlike them that all these people are sort of self-involved and they sort of accidentally hurt each other as family and friends because they don't think things through. Okay. Season two just started with season one was one of the best things Amazon's produced. Season two just came on. It's all available. And the first one starts with a big wedding, which is really interesting because, you know, at weddings, you got all the family involvement and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
It goes a little bit south. Catherine Hahn, who I love, she's in this as a rabbi who becomes the girlfriend of one of the characters. It's got, I'm trying to think what all happens in these, but there's also like he and his ex-wife are coming to a sort of an understanding about their relationship and what it means. And she's always known about this, this sort of tendency on his part, but she just thought it was kind of cross-dressing. And, some of his family is very, his daughters are very supportive of this in sort of an aggressive way. Uh-huh. And it's also about sort of trans issues and that kind of thing. Yep. Jill Soloway, who's the creator, I think, I believe her father is actually trans. That's sort of based on, on that kind of thing. It's a really interesting show. It's really well done, amazing acting, and I'm looking forward to catching more of it. I'm two episodes into season two so far. So,
what is the title of the show again?
Transparent.
Transparent. Got it. That sounds really good.
All right. So to change completely, over the New Year's break, I did a board game night, and I got a chance to play the game Time Stories.
Yeah, you picked this up a little while ago.
Yeah, and I found
one of the buzz games of the not just for here, but
and it's funny. I've heard you explain it to several customers, and I'm like, I really want to play it, so I'm kind of sad I missed game night because I wanted to play this one.
And here's the weird thing about Time Stories, and I've heard this from a few people who've bought it. It is a not entirely replayable game. Right. Like, you get it, and you open the board is like this sort of abstract board where it represents up to four time travelers. You're traveling into the bodies of people in this time period trying to fix an anomaly.
Uh-huh.
And the expansions, which there's one out so far called the Marcy Case, which is set in 1992, they all represent an anomaly that you have to fix.
Right.
So the one in 1921 that comes in the game in the base box is an insane asylum in 1920s.
Oh.
And it's got sort of a horror bent to it.
Uh-huh.
And what you do is you lay out these cards. They're very beautiful. They create like a scene. And there's a map that's created by cards. And you sort of go to the different places in this map and try to uncover. Under each card, there's a thing. It's a cooperative game. You don't read and reveal, but you sort of paraphrase what's going on because you have sort of a telepathic connection with the other time agents.
Yep.
And basically, by spending these time units to jump from different places, you try to figure out what's going on and set it right. The trick is, in spending your time units and going to all these places, you run out of time to do this, and you basically lose and have to go back to the future, and they send you back again. But the conceit is every time it costs energy and resources, the more times you go back, the less you win at the game.
Right.
And so what they'll do is
be more efficient, I guess.
And so it's almost like Edge of Tomorrow, where basically you go back. We played through twice, and that took us about 3 hours.
Yeah.
So this is a longer game. This is like those legacy format games where you play, and then you get back together and you play again. It's almost an RPG crossover.
Right.
But basically, we got through this thing. We discovered a few things. We're like, oh, we need to do this. We need to not do this so we can skip that next time. And then we're like, okay, well, if we do this this time, we're almost going to run out of time. Are we sure we want to do this? And we did the thing, and it turned out to be a blind alley that took our time, and we were really angry about it.
It is entirely cooperative?
It's entirely cooperative.
So this is almost like if Pandemic, you were trying to set a time stream event,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But there's also, like, there's some interesting, like, every time you pick up a card, you sort of read it, and there's art, and there's atmosphere to it. It's almost got that Dixit kind of beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
So it's very immersive. It's supposed to be sort of a, you are playing a role. Like, I was in the body of a guy who was a paranoid delusion, and he couldn't move places by himself. If he did, we cost more time units, because he got sort of slowed down by it. One of us was playing a cannibalistic little girl. You're jumping into.
I understood that there is a darker bent to this series overall.
You're jumping into the bodies of insane asylum patients. Like, that's who you're using as your tools.
Right.
It's really fun and really interesting.
A good movie, by the way.
We had a ton of fun playing it. The only issue I have with it is, like I say, once you've gone through it, you sort of know all the twists and turns. You can't replay it, but that's why you have the expansion boxes, and that's why the board is sort of simple, because there's different mechanics. Like, there's no shooting in this one. And the first one is very much light in the combat, heavy on investigation.
Right.
The Marcy case has more of a shooting and guns mechanic. Huh. And it's all represented by the same counters and that kind of thing. It's just there's a card, like in the Marcy case, that says these represent this, this represents this, so that there's different mechanics. There's like more physical damage danger in some, more mental danger in some.
Yeah,
the next one is a dragons. It's like set in a medieval time.
So it sounds like they set up a framework that will really accomplish or accommodate a really wide variety of gaming concepts.
And it's not just time travel, it's also alternate dimensions.
Oh, wow.
So, really neat. I like this. This is one of those that if you can get your game group to go in on it, and like everybody buys in, and then you just sort of trade it around your gaming group, that seems like a good way to go. It's hard to come by. We actually have it in stock right now. I don't know how long we'll have it in stock.
Yeah.
But, and then the Dragon expansion is supposed to be coming out in January sometime, and then I can't remember what the next one is, but they're doing a bunch of, it's like Egypt. It's like ancient Egypt.
Wow, this is hugely varied.
Yes.
It seems like they're going to support it pretty well.
Yeah,
though,
there's going to be new expansions every couple of months.
Okay.
So I really dug this. I understand it's an unusual kind of like, you know, like cooperative mechanic and deck building mechanic was like a new thing for us when we discovered them. This is this whole legacy format, which Pandemic does and Risk did, this sort of building on your game and playing longer. This is another new mechanic like. So it's fun. I liked it. Finally, to divert completely from that, Nick, you read some Agatha Christie.
I did, and it's not completely diverted because there are themes that you're talking about that are actually involved. Maybe not ancient.
Agatha Christie writes a lot about time travel.
Yes, or small cannibal children. That's a little strange.
Did we discuss last week why this crossed your path?
Yes.
We briefly mentioned because we saw The Hateful Eight, and I read an article that said there was a lot of parallels with this book, which is called And Then There Were None.
Right.
Written by Agatha Christie. I don't remember when she wrote this or if it was, you know, earlier in her career.
I'm gonna say 1943.
All right, sure.
Apparently, 1943 is what Dave is going to choose. Regardless, this was the first Agatha Christie book I've ever read.
I've seen the movie, which I understand is a little bit different, but not read the book.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie. And I know that actually BBC One just did a new adaptation of it with a lot of sort of big players involved that just aired right before the end of the year, which I'm kind of sad I missed it. I'm trying to find it because it's got people like Sam Neill and a few other people that I think will just chew the scenery like no others.
Well,
I think Miranda Richardson is involved.
I know just from what I having seen the movie, plot-wise, it's got a really cool hook to it.
Yeah, I mean, the central plot is that 10 individuals through different means are given sort of a... You know, they're told to come to this island.
Right.
You know, they're
it's divided, a privately owned island.
Whether or not it's, your friends might be here, or, you know,
I'm hiring you.
Yes. Regardless of that, 10 individuals are brought to this island, and, you know, during the course of one evening, something is set in motion, like a in the book, a gramophone, which is a record player, is played, and accusations are made as to each individual being a culprit behind a crime.
Right.
A murder.
But the also, like, as time goes by, people start dying.
Yes.
And there's a question of whether it's their host, whether it's one of them. It's a true whodunit.
It is. And I know, like, our staffer Tilo was saying how kind of terrifying it was.
Right.
I think in a lot of ways, I think it was beautifully written and well written, and there is sort of this aspect of people turning on each other and that being very horrific. But it's also in the classic whodunit, I've seen a lot of the tropes that this book basically created.
Right.
Like from Clue to everything, which Clue did sort of the farcical, humorous take of this.
Even the House on Haunted Hill
is
a riff on it with a bunch of people who are like, why are we all here? You know, how do I know you? You don't, this doesn't make any sense.
But the characters are very diverse. I think that Christie did a great job of gathering people from, like, a general to, you know...
There's a soldier of fortune, there's a governess.
There's a governess, there's the two sort of, not a maid, but the, like, a butler and the cook. They're a couple. Everybody's given a really good sense of character, and their backstories are interesting. And watching them sort of devolve as they can't quite figure out who is causing all of this insanity is very interesting. Like I said, this is the first Agatha Christie book that I've read. I will no doubt read more. I know that her character, Poirot, sort of...
Her detective,
and the only the thing I've seen him in is The Murder on Orient Express.
Right.
Which I'm probably going to read now because I think her style is very interesting, so... And I like whodunits.
All right. Dave, you said you thought it was published in 1943?
That was my guess.
Nick, you got a guess?
1937?
1939.
Oh.
Okay.
Yep.
Ballpark.
I win because I didn't go
in. Ballpark.
He's right. By Price is Right rules. Which, of course, is how we do everything here at Rogues Gallery.
Ballpark.
I really want to track down that BBC production, though. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, her detective guy was portrayed as like as a series by who's the actor?
Poirot.
I'm gonna blank on it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. He's a good actor.
He's a fantastic
David
actor.
David Suchet.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, he's good.
All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. Until next time,
Yo Joe 2016.
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.